Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Mongiorno. I'm joined today by Lean Janine Gagliardi.
not so lean these days, but I appreciate it.
How are you?
I'm good. Oh, well, I'm good. I'm just, this is next week's episode, but I'm just more tired than I've ever been.
I'm just more tired than I've ever been. As a little preview. Yeah, I'm good as well. Thanks for asking. And
I don't recall asking, Mike. I thought this was still about me.
I don't care.
And my worries, my troubles.
We look like the biggest nerds right now because we both have our own copies of The Art of Love, Death, and Robots front of us.
I thought we were doing season four tonight.
I know. We will.
I wish. When it happens. I wish.
When it happens.
We couldn't wait. We just had to do more Love, Death, and Robots.
Yes, absolutely. Well, when this book came out, I bought it immediately, but I didn't read it until after you read it. Because I kind of bought it. It was around Christmas, where there's just a lot of buying things. So I bought it, and it was just on my shelf. And I didn't get to it until you were like, oh, it's really good. Mm-hmm. Like, you had good things to say about it. Yeah. Like, you learned things about the show from it. And I was like, okay, now I really want to see it. Because sometimes I just look at the pretty pictures, which is fine. They are basically art books. But, you know, they do good interviews in this. And it did help me think. I did learn things about the production of the show that I didn't know. Like, I think it's part of their brand that these are films. They even refer to them as films, not episodes.
Yeah.
But it does seem like Blur, which is, it started off as a video game animatic studio, which is Tim Miller's studio. Mm-hmm. They're really in charge. Like, even if they say it's by this other studio, he seems to have executive producer, like he says he gives them autonomy, but I guess I thought that they really just like shipped it out to people, like you do it and whatever.
Yeah.
And it seems like they do have more authorial, like King Arthur. They have more like control over, you know, the final product.
Yeah, I see that too, and I thought that was really interesting. Like the first season, it's that guy Gabrielli. He's the animating supervising director. It seems like the animation supervising director is like the sort of the guy, the point person, the person who you would consider the director of the film. It seems to be the person that does that on this anthology, because every studio that they hire out to is reporting back to them. And then they have like final say on everything.
Right.
So he did the first season, and then it was Jennifer U. Nelson.
Right.
I think for 2 and 3.
Right.
And what's interesting is they both worked on Kung Fu Panda. So I'm sort of like, oh, is that how they met? Or like, did they know each other through that? And I wonder if like he couldn't do it and was like, oh, well, my friend Jennifer can.
Yeah.
I wonder. That's not in this book. That's just speculation. I hope for the
speculation.
Sequel.
Yes. Well, if they do more seasons, they'll do more art of books.
Yeah. Which is great.
So how do you feel about art of books in general?
I like them. I like them very much. I like art. I do. I'm a fan.
La-dee-doo.
Listen. I do. I really like art of books. I have a few of these. Mostly, I like animation. So it's mostly animated movies that I enjoy. If I really, really love a movie, I'm looking for the art of book right away. So I have Luca. I have Encanto.
Do you really love Luca?
I love Luca so
much. I was really
underwhelmed
by
Luca. I love
it.
It's such a vibe, and I love it so much. I find that the movies that I really, really cling to, like I remember when Finding Nemo came out, it was, you know, I was a young adult, but I was an adult.
You were a person.
I clung to it so much. I just enjoyed it so much. And just because the visuals were so beautiful and the story was like really simple, but like emotionally driven. And I find that Luca is a similar story in that respect, where it's just like a sort of a straightforward story, very emotionally driven. And then the visuals are just stunning.
Yeah.
I loved it. So I love Luca. I have that. And then Encanto I loved, but I love the art more, like even more than the film. I thought the film was great, but I really, really loved that world. I wanted to see more of that world. I wanted to see their rooms, like the other people's rooms. That's in the Art of book, which is cool, because you know you're going to get concept art. So they're just fleshing out all the worlds before it hits the screen. And so that's something I like of Art of books, because often you get a glimpse into the world building that happens behind the scenes that you don't necessarily get in the movie, but it's all there. It informs the rest of the movie, which is cool.
Yeah.
A friend of ours is an animator professionally, and he was developing a show and was talking to us about how like they have a rules page, basically like this character always does X but never does Y.
They have to develop
the rules for all the characters the visual rules of the characters as well. And I always think that's so interesting. Like, I just think it's so cool.
Like how in the beginning of The Simpsons, they used to do that thing where the top half of the head can turn a different direction from the bottom half.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Oh, no.
It would look like this weird, like their top half would go one way.
The eyes would go and the mouth would still be there.
The jaw would go the other way.
Mm.
And then they stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a whole video on like the rules of The Simpsons and how they've evolved. Yeah, I'm an art of book lover and an art lover. Like whenever I go to a museum, I'm always like, I gotta get, like, if there's an exhibit that has a book, I'm like, I gotta get that book if I like the exhibit. Or like, I just gotta go to the get any, you know, I gotta go get a treat. I have to go get a little book.
Like a coffee table book person? Not just an art of book? Because I'm a coffee table book person too. I have a lot of those.
Yeah, I have a lot of you know, like the Art of Goya, the art of, you know, Edward Hopper.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as you know, I'm a poet. So I write a poem every day. So that's hard. So sometimes I'm like, I don't have nothing to write about. So I just look at work and then, you know, I'll put after the work of whatever, like I'll name what it is that inspired it.
Okay.
So I recently went to the Japanese bookstore. What's it called? Starts with a K. There's the one in the city, and then there's one in New Jersey.
Oh.
And it's just a fucking weeb fest. And I get these books. I've gotten 2 years in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
They're just called Illustrations 2022, 2023.
Yeah.
And it's just Instagram artists. And I guess some of them are professionals. They're collected.
Mm-hmm.
You've got their names, but nothing else is in English.
Mm.
But I love it because I just love, I love art as much as I love like design and aesthetic. So I just got one of those. My thing though about the art of books is I feel like sometimes they're great. Like I feel like this is a really good one, Art of Love, Death, and Robots. But sometimes they're just cash grabs.
Okay.
Sometimes there's not enough stuff, and you know, and you feel like either you didn't dig deep enough, or there was some sort of weird corporate mandate of you don't want people to know how off the mark you were. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
I like a good art book that really shows you. And I gotta say, as much as I like this book, I do wish there was more, like, I love when there's like different character designs and you see how somebody grew into the character, you know.
You don't really have that in here.
And that stuff had to exist.
Yeah.
So why isn't it in here?
Yeah. That is something that I find in the Pixar books you see a lot of.
See, that's really good. Really cool. Yeah. See, stuff like that is really good.
Encanto and Luca. Well, one's Pixar, one's Disney Animation Studios.
Right, right.
But they both have like all the incarnations of what the character used to look like.
See, that's what I want.
What the house used to look like. So cool.
That's what I want.
I also really like fan art. I'm a big fan of fan art.
Yes, me too.
People out there making art of the things they love and doing it in different styles, doing it like modern. Now I'm medieval. Now I'm this. I love all of that. Like if I like something, I guarantee you that the next thing I'm doing is searching for the fan art of that.
Right, 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 right.
I just love it. I love art. I'm very cultured and
I get it.
Intelligent.
I do too. So we're both similar. We're the same. Neither of us is better than the other.
I guess so. Henry told me today, he was like, I have a really smart brain because daddy told me this and I remembered it. I was like, well, hey, that's great. You know, you're four, so you should be remembering things.
That's true. I have a very smart brain. You know who else said something like that? The former president.
I have all the best words.
The Art of Love, Death, and Robots, mm-hmm. written by Ramin Zahid.
Who I think conducted very good interviews.
Yes, yes. There was interesting stuff in here.
Congregation open to
page. Speaking of what do you call it? Mm-hmm. I love how in The Mandalorian they do the thing where they put the
concept art.
Yeah,
love that,
because it's concept art was always a big part of the fandom of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Going back to like Ralph McQuarrie and like all of that stuff. So I love that, because Star Wars for a long time was all about like this perfect unified image that we are projecting. Like, you know, there's no work going on here. Mm. Whatever you're seeing is the magic in front of the screens.
Yeah.
And I like how Mandalorian was just like, no, here's this. And
Right. Someone
recently noticed that for like a goof, the concept artist drew Oscar Isaac in one of them. And like some people caught it at the end of the episode. Like, I love that. I love in that they'll show like something different.
Something different will show up sometimes.
And it'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Look, this is
like the monsters look a little different.
Right.
Or,
right.
Like, the landscape is a little different. Right.
Well, yeah. I love when it's like you said about the rooms, like when it's like something, it's like, okay, you weren't blocking a specific scene. You were just exploring an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So they do in this talk about something we've talked about before, which is that it did originally begin as an idea to do heavy metal.
Right.
I guess it's like a comic book magazine. It's French.
Mm-hmm.
And we only call it heavy metal here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a heavy metal movie made here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
Mobius's thing? No.
I know
because Mobius influences a lot of this.
I really don't know the answer to that. I feel like, I don't know if it's his thing.
Or if he's involved at all.
I would, let me see. Let's Google right now. We have the internet. Mobius, heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
Yes, he did. He
produced by Ivan Reitman.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes, he did work on that.
Interesting.
He's very. They talk a lot of the artists in this talk about
Richard
Mobius.
Corbin, Angus McKee, Dan O'Bannon, Thomas Warkentin, and Bernie Wrightson. That's what it's based on, their art. Interesting.
Dan O'Bannon, isn't he a writer?
I don't know.
He wrote Alien.
Oh, okay.
And Return of the Living Dead.
One of the things I noted in the intro of the book is that Fincher and Miller, David Fincher and Tim Miller had been trying to get this made for 15 years.
Yes.
And no studio would take them, and Netflix wasn't really a thing at the time, or
right.
wasn't really a studio at the time. And they were nervous because the R-rated aspect was too risky.
Right, right.
And then when Tim Miller directed Deadpool, Fincher called him and said, quote, "Nice job, motherfucker. Now we're going to use your momentary popularity to get heavy metal made," which is
crazy because you're like an Oscar-winning director. Why am I the guy who's
why is this resting on me?
Right.
You couldn't use your own credentials to get it made.
Right. Motherfucker. I was also interested to learn that in the beginning of the process, Kevin Eastman was one of their partners.
Oh, Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, one of the creators of Ninja Turtles. And he's not on board at all anymore.
He was
originally part of it. They wanted it to be a movie. Oh, James Cameron too was involved in it originally.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, momentarily.
Yeah, I think it was going to be a movie.
Okay.
And now it's this other thing. And you know
what?
I'm
glad it's this.
Yeah.
Maybe get more of it.
I get why. I mean, I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they couldn't get the rights. Maybe the rights are too expensive. Mm. But really, in the end, it ends up being its own thing.
Yeah.
So you and I have, whenever we've talked about Love, Death, and Robots, we've talked about the sort of the aesthetic that's not in each episode, but the aesthetic of the show,
yeah,
like the icons and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of talk about that in introduction. Mm-hmm. And I really liked when they were talking about how the three icons, the way they come into place is almost mm-hmm. like it's a slot machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're putting in your coin and you're going to get some crazy story. You don't know what crazy story you're going to get, mm-hmm. but it's just going to pop up and you're going to see it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a genius idea.
They also talk about how they really didn't want the skull to be the symbol for the death. So it's an X.
Yeah.
Officially, it's like a heart, an X, and a really minimalistic square with two dot eyes, right. which is supposed to represent the robot. But that's one point where you see the evolution of right. the iconography.
Look at his emojis.
Yeah, it starts with emojis, like heart eye, smiley face, the skull emoji, and then the robot emoji. And they're right. like, okay, let's distill that. Let's see how that can work. And then they worked with someone to develop what the emojis would be essentially for all the episodes, which is cool. And then something about the posters for Love, Death, and Robots is you'll see the words Love, Death, Robots, and then over it, it looks like those three symbols have been spray painted. And they said this is because their like mascot was Banksy.
Right, right, right.
That was really interesting, even though Banksy's not involved as far as I know.
Right, they were thinking of Banksy. Yeah,
they wanted, they used the word, which I was like, oh no. They're like, they wanted to have attitude.
Yeah, it's very 90s. So we decided we'd put sunglasses on everything.
Yeah.
They have a branding and design team, mm-hmm. and that's run by Jennifer Miller.
Who's his wife, Tim Miller's wife.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. In I think it's with Drowned Giant, they're in the interview, he talks about like, so Jennifer and I were sitting over breakfast one morning and we were talking about this and I was like, oh, okay, so this is a married couple. Miller's a common enough
that's why
last
I didn't
name
think about
it.
Yeah.
that it could, they, I right. didn't think so either. And then.
Yeah. Well, she did a great job because
yeah.
they interview her in this whole part where they're talking about the branding. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, she said the slot machine thing, which I think I always intuitively was circling. Mm-hmm. But once I read it, I was like, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, because the way they come down, it's like, boom, boom,
it's like,
boom,
what are you
like
going to get
seven,
next?
777. Yeah,
whatever. You're going to get some crazy thing. And and Banksy. And it's funny, I didn't think Banksy until the minute I read that. I was like, yeah, of course it's Banksy. Like it's very Banksy. Like,
right.
Especially the posters.
It looks like a stencil.
Volume 1 and 2. Yeah.
Stencil work.
Yeah.
Not just like graffiti.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, that's very typical of Banksy. I like that they always start with the text.
Yes.
They're always starting with the story and then.
Which is smart.
And then they decide which studio will do it based on visual concepts that they determine in the story. So it's not like they give it to a studio just willy-nilly. They're like, yeah. Okay, what visual concepts are we seeing in the story? And then who would be best suited for that type of
right,
story?
Right, right, right.
Which I always
and
assumed.
It is, yeah.
But it's kind of interesting now to like look at the process of each studio because the processes are very different.
Right. I didn't realize that, we've talked about how like some are more realistic looking, but I didn't realize mm-hmm. that some were doing motion capture.
Yeah, a lot of them, a lot more
yeah.
than I thought were
yeah.
doing motion
Real
capture.
Real Andy Serkis shit.
Yeah. Which I also thought was like, oh, you must need like a huge budget for that. But I guess you don't.
You just need some green tights and some little balls
yeah,
upon their face.
Yeah, little tennis balls or whatever they have.
Yeah.
We could just mocap right now. That would be a great Halloween costume to do. Just like a mocap suit.
Someone has to have done it.
With a green screen behind you.
That'd be hilarious. they start with the story, which it seems like Tim Miller is very like a real nerd because apparently like a lot of it's just things he's read that he wants.
Yeah. He has this quote in Ice Age because I think he directed Ice Age.
Yeah.
He said, quote, I remember my father debunking the stuff I got excited about, which sounds like a fun guy to live with, mm-hmm. Like ancient aliens. He'd scoff. Well, if that actually happened, it would be on the front page of every newspaper. He was right, of course, but the shelves of his library were stuffed with sci-fi and fantasy
yeah.
because he was a dreamer, too.
So why is he shitting all over
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so why is he going, fuck you, then.
I'm going to direct Deadpool one day.
Dad, and you'll be dead.
Yeah, and one of the middle-tier Terminator movies, so fuck off.
Oh, did he direct Terminator? I didn't realize that.
I didn't see the one he directed, but I hear it's middle-tier.
Oh, all right.
it's
his love of the genre really comes
yeah
through,
and
he's picking really good stories.
He talks about being faithful too. Mm-hmm. Like, they are faithful to, there's none of, it's not, I mean, I haven't read it, and by the way, there is an imprint now of volumes reprinting all of these stories together as Love, Death, and Robot
wow.
collections.
Oh, that's cool. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah but apparently they're very like they're minimal in what they change.
Mm-hmm. Well, he became emotional in the like extras, like the featurettes and stuff that they have on Netflix when he's talking about the drowned giant. He's like, we just really wanted to make sure that we were faithful to the text, and his daughters signed off on it. The author's daughters signed off on it. And he's like, that meant so much to me. And he becomes like visibly like emotional when
he obviously
loves this stuff.
Right, and that's
so when
he directed.
Yeah.
And that's an old story.
Which he also, you got a tidbit in here about how he had originally planned to make it a live action VFX hybrid story, but couldn't because COVID was happening at the time.
Huh. Yeah. I like the way it ends up being.
Me too. But I could see it being live action, like an Ice Age type thing.
Sure. Yeah.
But honestly, I think this is sort of like shitting all over cinema, but I almost feel like it has more depth as a fully animated piece.
I agree,
because I think Ice Age comes across as a little hollow. Like whenever I see the people on screen, I'm like, give me the art
It always feels like a gimmick, or like obviously there's art in the composition of photography, but you know, there's something. Well, when it gets into film theory, like there's always been this argument of like, is the most pure film something that's like just like a camera, like a nanny cam where no one is manipulating it and it's just, you're just recording and it's there's no hand guiding it? Or is the most cinematic thing the exact opposite, where you're completely subjective and you're crafting things? I've always been of the latter. Mm-hmm. So to me, the reason I like animation is because I like cinema. It's pure cinema. Like,
it's
animation is the
crafted,
most pure.
Yeah.
Like, I have control over everything. Every single tiny thing.
The performances.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's like a nanny cam. I would think that's
that was my modern thing, but
no,
like,
no, but just like it's footage versus a
like,
film.
Like in the, like some of the French New Wave stuff was just like, Or even like, you know,
or like Warhol's film would be like a person sleeping,
or like Italian neorealism where it would just be like non-actors, barely mic'd with like no editing, just like shots that went on for days. And there's something cool about that. But at the same time, to me, it's like, you know, I've always been like the sort of milieu type of person when it comes to like movies, like fucking make something fantastic out of it. We've talked before about the connection between, you know, how all media in a culture reflects off one another, and the connection between video games and film. And I think it is really interesting that Blur, the main studio here, Tim Miller Studio, and a lot of the other studios are video game animatic studios, meaning the cutscenes in a contemporary video game. Which
they push back on that a lot throughout the book. They're like, this is so much, so much more involved in a cutscene.
Right. But it is. Well, it's interesting because it didn't occur to me that if you're an animator now, that's one of the things you may end up doing.
Yeah. It's like children's films, video games. That's where these people come from typically.
Right. But it's so interesting because you can see video game, I don't want to say aesthetic because the aesthetics are all different, but you can see the vibe of video games. You can see like,
there's a handful in every season.
Yeah, you can see the video game mentality.
Okay, yeah.
Making its way through this work.
Yeah.
I have all sorts of like, it was like grad school. I have all sorts of yellow sticky notes in my book. And I remove them as we move on.
All right.
Oh no, I dropped my thing.
Oh my goodness.
So one thing we can't really talk about, or we can't demonstrate on the podcast, is just how beautiful it is. I mean, like, it's just like the kind of thing you just look at it. Like, page 15 here is from, I never remember the names. The one with the like the steampunk fox one. Look at the.
Oh, what is that? Hunting or something?
Good Hunting.
Good Will Hunting.
Yes, Good Will Hunting.
That was it.
Also, this book shows what they call color scripts.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't aware of what a color script was before I read this, which is sort of like, it's almost a little bit like a storyboard, but it's not a narrative thing. Mm-hmm. It's a way for the visual artist to look at the whole film visually and see like how the colors ebb and flow, and mm-hmm. that's why it's a color script.
Do cinematographers see that for regular films?
I don't think so.
Because I've seen some for like, and I don't know if they're made by the people making the film, or if they're made by fans, but I've seen them for like Wes Anderson movies.
Well, I think he definitely does, right?
Right.
I mean, like, his shit is like so contrived. Like, yeah. It's to the point of like everything is like a dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's that particular, the way they do it with here, the way they do it in like this stuff.
Mm.
I don't even know if it's something they do in all animation. It's something they do here.
Yeah.
The VFX supervisor said, "We often help with the visual style of the project."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was unaware of, I guess I was naively thought that every studio just got to do whatever the fuck they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like Tim Miller Studio at least is like, it seems like they give you freedom,
mm-hmm.
but they do kind of like rein you in ways.
Yeah.
And I think they cast studios based on what they think would you a good handle, story for you.
Yeah. The other thing is what I would normally call CGI, they call VFX for everything. It's like VFX thing, a VFX thing. I'm like, oh, okay, that's the new parlance. Like that's what they say now.
Right, right, right.
I gotta update my lingo.
Yeah, I guess when I say VFX, I often think like
special effects in a movie, right?
Right,
like,
right.
I don't know. But I guess it's for animation. But it is, a different vibe, a different thing.
Do you ever watch the Corridor Crew YouTubes?
The one that you sent me, is that the Corridor Crew?
Yeah.
Where it's like animators react?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the one for Love, Death, and Robots, which I thought was interesting.
There was, I think, a couple for Love, Death, and Robots.
It's a lot of like shop talk, so some things I don't get.
Right.
But it's interesting to hear, because they'll be like, so we like rig the character like this, and you're using this program. And you want to get this program. It's like, they're like, wow, you're using that program still? You can make that with this? They're like, it's wild. You can layer all kinds of stuff. I'm like, well, this is great.
Yeah,
I
love it. It's really crazy.
All of that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what anything you're saying.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Things that are cool are like when they, because they get into it a little bit in this book, but it's like they make the character, like I remember watching and being fascinated by the like VHS little features, like before a movie, like a Disney movie, where you'd see the animator with like pieces of paper, and then they'd be like the cell paper over that, and they'd like flip the cell onto the paper and then flip it back off when it was like hand drawn, and then they'd be like, and now we can do it with computers, and then they'd like show you like the stampede scene or something from Lion King, and it would just be so cool. And
then they'd go have a cigarette and a steak.
So now it's so interesting because it's like it does start with the drawing, whether you're drawing on an iPad or a tablet or whatever. Or, you know, physically on paper.
Yeah.
Or making a statue, right? Mm-hmm. Like developing the character. But then once you put it into this program, then you rig it and like it, you tell the program how it's supposed to move. And then it just moves like that all the time, which is so cool. It's like a physics lesson.
From watching Corridor Crew, I learned that because like their main, the one you saw, the animators react, is a spinoff because the main one is VFX artists react, and they just look at visual effects in movies. Usually they'll find an older one that's really bad, like The Rock in Scorpion King and how awful that is, and like something new that they don't know how to do, and they become popular, so they have like people from the industry come in and talk. And then the two spinoffs are Stuntman React.
That's cool.
And then animators fun. But the thing I guess the thing I naively thought was that when it comes to VFX, like somebody is literally like
animating every movement.
Yeah, like Jar Binks. And it's like that, you can do that. And there are places where that's better.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases, it's like you're like, it's just math. It's like baking.
You're putting
it all together.
And then
Gollum's going to move the way you want him to move.
So
or
wild.
If he doesn't, you then have to change something.
I'm very like, I really am sort of a fangirl of animation in this way, because I tell Bill, I joke sometimes, I'm like, if our sons want to make me proud, like the best thing they could possibly do is become animators, because I would just be like, and my son, the animator.
Yeah. You'd bring it up in all conversations.
They're like, did you see that Super Bowl commercial with the baby in a business suit? He animated that.
Yeah.
That was him.
Yeah. Well, my son's a doctor. Well, fuck you. How about my son?
Honestly, who has he made happy today? He told that guy he had ass cancer, so.
That guy's real bummed.
Yeah.
You know? My son makes babies in suits.
He makes the world happy.
It is crazy. I mean, the hot topic now is AI art. Oh. And really now all we have is, at least from a consumer point of view, mm-hmm. all we have is AI stills. But soon we'll have AI.
Animation.
Oh. And then they'll just be... Which is a crazy new place, and I'm not fatalistic about it. I know some artists are bothered, mm-hmm. And I respect that, especially if you have a very distinct style and mm-hmm. you see somebody coming and the AI is learning from your work. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's being stolen, but at the same time, how many episodes of Love, Death, and Robot are taking the Mobius style?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the same thing we do.
Right. We're consuming all these things. It just does it much faster and comprehensively, right? So it can get everything while we can just get what we've been exposed to.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I've talked about it on the air yet, but me and Jen have a new dog, Peach.
Peach!
And she used some AI thing and, like, made, like, these sci-fi Peach, like, Peach in little spacesuits. Made my day.
So cute.
Made my day. Because for a little cute puppy, she has a very proud face, and that's...
She's a proud face.
She says she has a concerned face, like
okay,
like she's like a little general.
She's giving it a lot.
Yesterday she saw a turkey for the first time, because you might not know this insanity, but here on Staten Island where we live, there's a huge turkey population, and it's actually growing more. I think the very mild winter we had, didn't kill a bunch of them.
Yeah, and they're like really turkey.
So there was
they're ready for Thanksgiving.
Assholes.
Their plumage is full.
They are fucking dicks. Turkeys are so scary. So yesterday,
they will not move when you drive your car.
Yeah. No. Oh no.
Don't even try beeping at them.
Fuck you.
If I see a person beeping at a turkey, I'm like, oh, you don't deal with turkeys. Obviously, you have to drive as fast as
what are
you can.
A rube?
Like they will move like several inches to the side and let your car over, but you have to play chicken with the turkey.
Right. So they're.
You know how it goes. You're like, God, when will this episode be over?
No. I was trying to remember a joke that I said recently, but it was stupid. It was around Thanksgiving, and we were talking about where we wanted to go, and I said, like a bunch of businessmen, let's talk turkey. And I thought it was really funny. Funny enough to repeat on a podcast months later. So there was a turkey on Jen's lawn. Which, first of all, terrified. I almost broke up with her. I was like, we're done.
But I imagine she lives in the part of the island near where they usually are, right?
They're moving. I've never seen one on her fucking lawn.
They're on our block sometimes now, which is wild. Because they used to only live in one area, and now they're miles away from where they used to be.
Yeah. And crazy. Peach was freaked out. Oh, yeah. She was like, what the fuck is that?
What is that?
What is that?
You have dinosaurs here? I didn't know.
I've only been alive 5 months, but my mind is blown.
I don't like any of this.
Yeah, yeah.
She's right. Yeah. It's her home. She has to defend it.
So something that I learned in here, which I never noticed, was in one of our favorites, Beyond the Aquila Rift.
Yeah.
There is a shot, a very quick... sort of tracking shot where there's a glass in mm-hmm. the foreground mm-hmm. and it's the two characters, the main guy and the woman who ends up being the creature mm-hmm. are sitting on the couch. And when it goes past when it tracks past the glass, you can see what she really looks
her
like.
Her true form, yeah.
But they say it in this, but it's not shown in this. So I had to run to the Google and find it. And then I sent it to you. And I was like, holy shit, my mind is blown. Because you know why? I never imagined it like that. I always imagined that it was all like the Matrix.
Yeah.
That it's in his head.
Not that she's sitting next to him.
That they're like doing stuff.
Like, what?
But you know what? But they fuck. So I don't know.
Well, she scratches his back. I'm like, what he has? Like bug scratches? Ugh. But then I don't actually think that's happening. Because he wakes up and he's still in his pod.
Well, that's true.
You know? So
so who knows why
unless
that's
she just
there.
Keeps putting him back
Maybe
in there.
Maybe it's just a bullshit in the... It's just some, I don't know. It's just
some,
a fun
like
thing.
Like a little Easter egg.
I never noticed it.
Well, something else that you learned in the Killer Riff. They talk about how like the sex scene was very complicated to animate, which I'm sure it would be.
Oh, right.
And how they had to be really, really sensitive about it. And right. they treated it with a lot of care. And then one of the producers had a quote. And she said, I loved my parents' reaction to this episode. I was like, really? Because I can't imagine something worse than having to watch a sex scene with my parents.
Right.
And she's like, I can't wait for you to watch this episode.
That's fantastic.
Oh my God.
But what's interesting, but you know, the thing, I think I read this in here. One of the things that challenging for them is like, they've spent their careers doing fucking Pixar or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now they got to put like titties and they're like, I don't know how to do this. I've got no fucking experience in this shit.
Well, so one of them for the dump.
Yeah.
They said they had to look at pictures of naked old men to get his physicality right. And the quote was, it was shocking to have that on the studio computer screen.
Oh, the what's the one with Dracula?
Yes.
That's the only one that's actually 2D, like completely traditional 2D animated. So that means other ones that seem 2D
are actually...
or actually just... that's just an aesthetic they're going for. Sucker of Souls.
Yeah.
Sucker of Souls is the only one thus far that's really 2D animation.
Mm.
And I love Sucker of Souls.
Me too. I liked some tidbits in that one where they said they were going for... is it pronounced Giallo?
Giallo.
Giallo inspired color palette.
Yeah.
I guess with all the red.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the character who gets sliced in half is based on the character design supervisor's childhood friend.
Nice.
He said, I'm not mad at him or anything. I just thought it'd be funny.
I feel like you might be.
Maybe a little mad.
Yeah, Giallo is an Italian.
It's like Suspiria.
Or is right, it? Yeah, that's okay. The big one.
Okay.
Giallo means yellow.
Yellow.
And it gets its name from these pulp novels that had these yellow cheap pages.
Mm.
And Giallo novels were more like detective kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
But then in film, it kind of morphed into this thing of like horror and like just these crazy primary colors and stuff.
Yeah.
So absolutely, like the reds and all the crazy, like it's very Giallo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have a lot of notes in The Witness? I do too.
Yeah. Yeah.
We wrote this one off so bad. I just listened to the episode, our first episode, which, oh my God, 4 years ago.
I know.
How is that possible?
We're almost at episode 300.
It's crazy.
I know.
I re-listened to it and we're like, oh, it looks so nice. It really looks so nice. But like, there's not really much of a story there. And we really didn't appreciate it for what it was, I think.
You drank the Kool-Aid.
It's not a story.
Well, yeah, I always liked it, but I never mm-hmm. understood why like the protagonist became like the mascot.
Mm-hmm. She's on the cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's on the cover of the art book.
Right. Or her, an amalgam of her and other characters.
I guess so, yeah. But she's the most recognizable.
Yeah, yeah.
People
were cosplaying her.
Yeah.
Like immediately.
Like they do Hibato now.
Yeah. Like so.
His art style. So this is very fascinating to me because Alberto Mielgo, who wrote and directed this and yeah. did the same for Hibato, which is so funny to me because
that's the best
they
one.
They start with the story. They yeah. always say they start with the story, but he wrote and directed this. So it's his own story. It's just his own thing.
Right, right.
So they must have really wanted him.
Right.
And
because the same thing with Hibato, right? That's not
yes,
based on anything.
Yes, it's just his own thing.
Yeah.
So I imagine they wanted him. They just wanted him to be right. involved in the project. And his
right,
process is really interesting.
Isn't he from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah, he's from Into the Spider-Verse. He's done some, you know, he's involved
Tron
in
Tron Uprising, which yeah. is like a Disney cartoon.
Okay. He's involved in like, you know, mainstream studio projects. Right. And I just, in reading this stuff, his process is so wildly different than everybody else's process.
Images. He goes yeah. into he actually goes out to the world with a still camera and like scouts the way a location scout would. But you know, a location scout would then like bring the you know pictures to the director, and then they'll decide if they want to shoot there.
Mm-hmm.
He just takes those images and mm-hmm. then uses them.
Yeah, yeah. and then paints them.
Yeah.
So his process is crazy. And I felt like in reading this, I was like, God, I bet all the other animators were just like jealous of him because he's obviously so crazy talented.
Yeah.
And he just seems like an eccentric genius. Like he's just out there doing his own thing. Nobody else seems to do this. So he said he finds inspirations in pictures he already has. And then he goes to the location and takes a ton of photos, as you said. So he went to Hong Kong for The Witness and took a bunch of photos for the exteriors.
Yeah.
And then he said a photo of Berlin was the thing that inspired the interiors. But a lot of the interior, there's one of the, you can see the apartment doors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This really reminds me of like, he's from Barcelona. This really reminds me of like Spanish apartments.
Hmm.
There's this Spanish zombie movie. I think it's called Wreck.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the apartment building just looks like this. And that's what it reminded me of. So then he paints the photos.
Yeah.
Uses them as a storyboard. Then puts animation over the paintings. He said, like you would in Bambi.
So it's kind of like, right. Which so is it's kind of like rotoscoping.
Yeah. And then he built a studio from scratch to make this, short. Because he had not worked independently before. And then when they talk about Hibato later in the book, they're like, Mielgo Studio, Pinkman TV. So it's like he built that studio and then it's just his studio that's ongoing.
Right.
So he built the studio from scratch to make this project. I'm like, God, he's just like, just a Renaissance man doing it all. And actually, if you look at the character sketches, like the faces, the face shape in particular and the ears, you really get a good look. That's one of the things I love about the art of books. You know, animation is always moving. It's not a ton of still time. And you really get a good look at the character designs and like what things are supposed to look like.
Yeah.
The vehicles, the environments.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you see a lot that you don't see on the screen. And his character design for both the Witness character and the killer, are very similar to the protagonists of Hibato. Like very similar features.
He has this thing he does with eyes where they look like glassy and sometimes even like bloodshot. But it's just this weird, like it's like some elements are in focus and some elements are out of focus, but it has nothing to do with a camera. It has to do with like what he just decided to be in focus, which is also a big thing in the Spider-Man movie. Like it's just like that sort of like it's blurry and not at the same time.
His style, I think, emerges from this book as my favorite style. And
interesting.
It's just, I don't know. I just love the way he paints these things. And then when you discover that it's actually all a painting, like you see, you see the paint, you see all the interesting things that are there. And also the details, like it's sort of nowhere, even though it's Hong Kong and the interiors are European. And then this is in Russian, the sign is in Spanish. Like it's all over.
Which
is so cool.
That's interesting. I don't know what my favorite of all the styles, my favorite aesthetic would be. I kind of like the more 2D animated kind of stuff. Maybe because that stuff is so traditionally thought of as like kid stuff. So to do something wild in that.
Yeah, I like that as well.
Comes off as like very challenging in a way.
I find myself least impressed by the ones that look like video game animatics because I'm like
the Cthulhu one.
Yeah, but I know that there's so much work that goes into it. Like I was really interested to see what went into Shapeshifters, and I'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that process was really cool as well.
So Suits, do they talk about that they added on that ending?
Yes. That they were supposed to come every year like locusts.
Yeah, but then they added the ending, which I think changes the whole thing.
Me too.
Because you're like, oh, they're not. They're the bad guys. They're the invader. Yeah. It's their planet.
It's such a twist because, I mean, they say it here that they really emphasize the emotional and community aspects of the story.
Right,
really love these people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end, you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, no.
Right.
It's not their planet at all.
Right.
And
it's not that they're bad people. It's typical humans.
Yeah.
They just take more than.
And we don't get the emotion of the aliens at all because they're specifically designed with no eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just teeth.
Yeah.
And the eyes are the emotion.
Yeah. Here they are. Here it is right here.
Which is, they said they're designed like the alien from Alien, the Xenomorph.
Yeah. You no could eyes, see it. You could see teeth. It. Yeah. You could totally see it. You could see the H.R. Geiger of it. But yeah, like I love like in Suits, like the people look very Pixar-y.
Yeah.
So like I love the juxtaposition of like fucking real, not realistic, but like very detailed monster with very rounded and sort of cartoony aesthetic people.
Well, they said it's Happy Tree Friends meets Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
But I don't know what Happy Tree Friends is. Do you know?
No, I don't. But I can get from the
context name that of what it sounds means. Like. Oh, I see. Okay.
So I want to share a story with
you. I wouldn't say it's Happy Tree Friends. Happy Tree Friends is like...
Oh, I get it.
Like a cartoon chipmunk.
I get it.
All right. Maybe like Stardew Valley.
Yes. The best direction I ever heard a director giving, and I heard this on somebody tell this story on a podcast, so I can't remember who I heard the story from, but it's a story from Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
And it's something the director Paul Verhoeven said to, I believe, either an actor or an extra.
Uh-huh.
And that movie is about... you know, giant alien bugs that kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the direction he and everyone on set saw this, he came up to the guy and said, so in this scene, the bug is eating you. What I want you to think about is, imagine you're being fucked in the ass really, really hard, but you love it. Action!
But you love it.
Which is the greatest direction I've ever heard. Ever.
Oh my God.
But you love it. Action. Just processing that.
Oh my God.
Good Hunting.
Good Hunting. This was interesting because the director of Good Hunting was contacted by that guy, Gabriele. I want to say his last name is like Pucciello something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something Italian. And he was contacted by the supervising director after he posted his sketches to Facebook. Now, it's not like he's plucked from obscurity. Like he was a working animator. But... you know, he was just...
But that's what they do, because they work on mostly children's stuff. So on their Instagrams or on their social medias, they put their work.
Their own art.
Right. And then you get to see some side of them that no one's seen.
Yeah. This one also, it talks about some of the inspirations for Good Hunting and this short film called Bang Bang by Julian Bisaro was an inspiration. Yeah, and
never seen it.
I looked it up and it just looks like this.
Oh, really?
It's beautiful. It's in black and white. It actually reminds me a lot of the short Paper Man.
Okay. Which is
similar animation style for the characters. I like that you see all the steampunk.
Yeah, I see, this is the thing I like in an art of book where it's like, here are all the little elements that they've designed. Mm-hmm. And they may be in the background, but they're like someone put into, like this is...
Really reminds me of the Animatrix. Uprising.
Yes.
Episode.
It actually, the world of this, I didn't say this at the time when we recorded it because I hadn't seen it yet, but the world of this reminds me a lot of Legend of Korra.
Oh.
It's a lot of like, there's a big aesthetic shift from Avatar to Legend of Korra. There's like, I think, it's supposed to be a big long time between the two.
Yeah.
And it's more kind of steampunky kind of stuff.
Oh, interesting. They like moved on from like an agrarian society.
Right.
It's more industrialized, I guess. That's pretty cool. Gabriella Penaccioli. That's it. Gabrielli.
Also, he does this thing where like they show like the way they would block it out, like different elements would have different primary colors, just as a way to like figure out the different elements that you're working on. Yeah, I love I said this when we did the original episode. I love the idea of like automata.
Yeah.
Like just like their wind up toys.
Yeah.
Like it's not like it's none of the sci-fi robot stuff that we think of with later sci-fi. It's just like they're just like a little like, you know, like one of the monkeys with the drums. It's just like they're just a little tinker thing.
Mm. Shapeshifters.
And
this one, the supervising director directed that. So Gabriele Penaccioli directed Shapeshifters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought a few things were really interesting about this. So he teaches or taught animal anatomy at DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, so I did the werewolf designs. And then... the process was, first they like watched a bunch of films about Afghanistan. They were using, I also like that they like film as research, like even though it's fictionalized or dramatic,
right.
It's still like the research that goes into those films that informs your own work.
Right.
They also watched the documentary Restrepo. Then they went into the Sierra Nevada mountains to take pictures in various conditions. Mm. And then on a full moonlit night, they had a team member's dog run around to see how the moonlight played on the fur, which I thought was really cute. Yeah. I love that. And then they played out the stunt choreography on storyboards, then had a stunt team replicate the choreography that they created. To see if it would work, then animated that. So it was like, we're going to draw it, we're going to do it live, then we're going to draw it again.
Right.
So I thought those elements were very cool.
It seems like with every short, they're reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
For whatever it is they're trying
whatever
to
they
do.
Whatever they need, yeah.
I love here with Fish Night, they're showing you all the different little fish.
Right. Things are just swimming around in the background, as you said.
I love the full like page, like splash pages like this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the helping hand. I like her tattoos. Oh, you see her tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
Dead men can't catcall. And she has like one that has 9 lives and then it's like handwritten crossed out with 8 on it.
Yeah. That one, I often forget that one.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Right. I love tattoos like when they're like not the real performer's tattoo. Mm-hmm. Like you like what it means and.
Right. Like why does this character have this? Alternate histories. Neither of us like this.
Yeah, but it's the same PT. It's the same people that do Three Robots.
Oh, is it?
Or it's the same writer?
Okay. John Scalzi.
I'm not sure if it's the same artist
studio. Something I noticed about all of these women, with the exception of one, is like all of their boobs are just half exposed.
Yeah, nipples out.
Just nips out.
Nips out. I have no problem with that.
Just the top half.
Yeah. I love like that they're just shapes. Mm-hmm. The same thing's true for like the yogurt one.
The yogurt. It might be the same studio as the yogurt people.
Yeah. Lucky 13. That's another one that's motion capture.
That was cool. They added a LiDAR scanning sound effect that sounds like a beating heart. So it the ship is alive.
Yeah, it's something I didn't notice.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's all these things are like cool little tidbits that when you go back to watch, you're like, oh, now I'm going to notice that.
Oh, so Blind Spot, that's one that I said, like, I really like. It feels like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
They were inspired by Don Bluth, who is like American Tail, and he was a Disney animator who left and started his own studio. Mm. I think Secret of Nim is also
Don Bluth. Yeah, All Dogs Go to Heaven.
It's funny, but like, I would have never thought that because Don Bluth, I don't think, ever did anything like science fiction, but like it's in the faces. Mm-hmm. Like these are like Don Bluth faces. Because I remember my thing was like, it felt like a Saturday morning cartoon to me, but like one that was like doing something crazy.
Well, the one with the cap really looks like a Don Bluth face.
Yeah.
Is he on the next page, maybe?
Oh, yeah,
I think so. Sorry, now I'm just using your book. Where is he? I thought they had a picture of him. Oh, here.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, the robot with the cap really looks like... but also, you know, anime as well.
Well, it's funny because like a cap that immediately says to you, that's the young one who's juvenile.
It's Ash Ketchum.
Yeah, right. I see, are you... So I'm a big art book nerd. I once did... after I graduated with my bachelor's, I did interning, so I interned. Actually, no, I got paid, but I was interning. I interned at the Adobe Design. What do they call it? Awards or whatever. I think they do it every year. Adobe produces this thing, and like we rented a warehouse. We had artists from all over the world send us work, design work and artwork, and then we hosted the actual like judging, and we had all these different tables with all the, and like these judges would go around and like these like big people would like look at this stuff. And anyway, this one graphic artist, he went up to a page and he like swept it with his hand and he was like sniffing it, and he was like, I can smell the difference of the inks. And he was like, and ever since I saw him do that, I can't tell the difference, but the smell of ink I like.
Mm.
I'm like, yes. It's like wine. It's like, yes.
You're like, sir, can you please take your face off my painting?
Yeah.
Zima Blue.
Zima Blue, you son of a bitch.
Zima Blue.
It's my religion. Yeah, the color script in Zima Blue.
Very cool.
It's like
very cool.
The teal. And obviously, because like teal
the blue
is,
gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Even in the actual thing.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. And I, what did they say? They said that the character is actually based on someone. The face is based on somebody. Who was it?
Oh, boy.
Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does kind of look like Miles Davis.
She looks like Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah. Well, the thing over the eye. I love the, maybe my favorite image in this is him walking through like the lava on like Mars or whatever the fuck he is. Like when they just started, when he's on that sojourn, just like walking around the galaxy.
Yeah, he's just fully Dr. Manhattan at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is very Dr. Manhattan now that I think about it.
Oh, Aeon Flux. He had worked on Aeon Flux, Peter Chung.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
We gotta do an Aeon Flux episode at some
point.
We
should. I just gotta rewatch all of it.
Yeah.
Because I remember very little about like what's actually happening. The visual style is just so arresting that like that's what I remember.
Right, you know, right.
I don't remember what she's doing.
Well, there's that whole like first season kind of where they're just shorts and they all add up to one story.
Yeah.
And then they did episodes after that.
Yeah. Because I think those were the Liquid TV things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and automated customer service. Like this was one where they showed like the evolution of what the robot would look like.
Oh, yeah.
What did they say? They wanted it to look like a washing machine or something. They described it in some way.
Oh my god, they're really like grotesque old people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool though because you see things that, I mean, with all of these really, you just see things that are like momentary flashes and they're like fully designed spaces.
Right, right, right.
Like backgrounds and Fluff and Folds and have it. They designed an array of assistants, like all these different shaped assistants, which you can see in the course of the. Right.
I wonder if that level of detail comes from the video game world.
Probably. Because it's something you would explore.
Right.
Like something you can walk right up to. Like you can literally go.
Like you have, like if you make a space,
yeah.
You've got to like actually use a space. You're not just, you know, making three walls, you're making four walls. This was cool. They have this whole page here of all the different characters in ice. And like, I guess this is from the original artist. Like all this weird, like they would write these notes next to them.
Yeah.
Oxo always seems to be holding the vape pen. Mm-hmm. This guy always has his head cocked to one side to keep his hair out of his eyes. Ashamed of his skinny ass body. Has a habit of covering his arms. Like, kind of like funny notes on like their performances.
Right. And you can see like Fletcher and Sedgwick's physicalities next to each other. Like, they're so similar. And yet, the difference is I almost like that Sedgwick carries himself with confidence. It's not like he's that much more muscular than Fletcher.
But his face is more squared.
Symmetrical,
there's
I would say.
There's nothing round about him. You
okay,
know?
Okay.
Whereas the brother has the round chin.
He has a much more square jaw. It's like he's Fletcher with a filter.
Like a perfection filter
or something.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is what he is, right? Because he's modded.
Fucking extra.
His face is all angles. Some futuristic equivalent to a baseball hat to make him more recognizable.
There you go.
Butt hurt expression. I love that.
That's fantastic.
Which is very cool. But this, of course, is the guy who did Zima Blue, Ice. Two very different shorts, but also just a really cool animation style. And it's Robert Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the... I'm skipping ahead, but the Michael B. Jordan one.
Oh, okay.
Which is based on the Harlan Ellison one.
Yeah.
That is a live action NCG.
Yes.
Which
live action, not just mocap.
Like actual.
Oh, okay.
Like Ice Age kind of. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of went through and made notes. I didn't make notes on everything. Uh-huh. Just anything
like really
that stood out to me as like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I think this story was updated a lot because the original, I think, was published in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
And I think I don't know if it was as sci-fi, although, I mean, Harlan Ellison's a sci-fi writer.
So we get ASMR from, like, flipping pages.
Yes.
I'm trying to think.
I love looking at the artwork from, oh, what's it called? It's one of my favorites. The one that really looks like Mobius. Oh, the Very Pulse of the Machine. Oh, the Very Pulse of the Machine, yeah. Like, look at, like this work is just so incredible. Really? Like, look, like, this is incredible.
That's so stunning.
Just a podcast of two people reading a book.
It's just, here we are. Here we are.
Hibaru. It's funny because you look at Hibaru and it's like, something about it feels so real. Like, this, like, I remember when I watched this, I was like, is this have live action? But it doesn't.
Yes. Well,
but it's, yeah. I guess it's the pictures, right?
It's the picture.
But is he, but does he, does he actually put the pictures in, or does he copy them?
I mean, he must copy them, right? I think.
But something about her face always struck me as like,
like a person. Right. They filmed a person. But then you see his character design for The Witness, and you're like, oh, wait, he designed this face.
Right, because
like,
these aren't...
Like, the uneven pupil here, like, the he's always...
Right, he didn't have the face yet.
Yeah.
Like, you see the...
But these are soldiers that exist. These are guys who are there.
Oh, okay, yeah,
These are not evolutions of him. And then also just, like, some things that look so, not janky, but just, like he took a silver pen and just drew across the forehead. It doesn't look like a real piece of jewelry.
And all this guy's like tattoos and stuff.
I love it. I just love it. He's got such an interesting outlook.
Yeah.
Like at what he sees.
And he's got that like bloodshot eye thing.
Mm-hmm. For this one, he said he rented a van and drove north up the U.S. West Coast.
All right.
Taking pictures of the West Coast.
I love a crazy artist that say they're inspired by something and you don't see it at all.
You're like, huh? Like,
how'd you get Hibaru from that?
Well, you do. So, okay, we did a California road trip.
Uh-huh.
We did the coast. And you do see the coast in his work. It does look, it doesn't look like the Caribbean.
Right,
like,
right.
A lot of people are like, oh, well, it's a Puerto Rican word. It must be they're in the islands. But it doesn't look like the islands. The trees, the ferns, all these things, those are West Coast, like, they're Pacific Coast, like, foliage and natural landscapes. So I do see that in there.
Okay, okay. I see what you're saying.
But everything, that's his thing. He, like, really mixes. So you have these, like, conquistadors.
Right.
And then it's, like, the American West, but not the American West in the sense it's, like, all the way on the Pacific coast.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Spanish settlers were there as well, but not in the way we think about, like, the conquistadors arriving in South America and Brazil.
It just seems like it's some nebulous time. Like,
it creates this environment, like, this atmosphere of, like, this is a place that exists out of place, out of time.
Right.
This
never really
occurred. It's just something that is, it's his own myth. And then it also says, like, this character of the siren wasn't based on any mythology. He just had a siren in mind, and then he took the jewelry and the cultural dress of North Africa and India, and he just, like, created this siren character.
Right.
It's interesting to think that he says, like, neither of them are bad or good. They're both predators.
Interesting, yeah.
I'm like, but all right.
I said this on when we talked about it on the episode, but I love his version of a siren because you think of a siren as someone who has a sweet voice and sets a honey trap for you.
Yeah.
She just has a magical voice that, like, magnet makes you run toward her in madness.
Yeah.
Like, the guys are like, when she starts screaming and the fucking guys are like killing each other just because they're just going nuts.
Yeah.
Been there, am I right? Yeah, that's it. I mean, this is the kind of thing where, like,
well, the three robots.
Look at all the names, by the way. Like, especially thanks to the people who put it together. It's just like, you can't fit as many names. And you feel bad because these people work so fucking hard.
I know, it's true. One of the things I thought was interesting about three robots was that in the first three robots, you get the interview about, like, how they did it. And then they're like, we used this reader app to do the pyramid voice.
Yes.
And then when you get to the second three robots, the exit strategies, it's like this reader app was no longer, it was obsolete by the time we made the second one. So then we had to, like, work around it because we didn't have the tech anymore to make this voice.
Yeah.
Which was so funny. It's like not even robots were susceptible to the march of time, they said.
Yeah. That's such a crazy idea. Yeah, it's a beautiful book. I mean, if you like Love, Death, and Robots like we do, I would definitely check it out. It's very, very cool.
Really beautiful. I'm trying to think. I think I have something for All Through the House.
Stop motion. Real stop motion.
Well, specifically all through the house, they wanted to do stop motion because of stop motion's history with Christmas stories.
Which I don't know if I didn't even put that together. Mm-hmm. But yes, of course, it's like a Rankin and Bass thing.
Yeah, so funny. It's like, well, we really wanted to add ourselves in with them. Yay, yay. I wanted more from the tall grass because I love this.
They go through every episode, but some have more insight than others.
Yeah. So like some of you get a lot of really juicy tidbits. You get these really cool like behind the scenes pictures. Like the animators like touching the
dolls.
These dolls that they made for the shorts. Very, very cool.
And you get a really good look at what Santa Claus looks like.
Yes.
Which you can't really see that well in the episode.
Right. And he's all red.
Yeah, of course. Ooh,
yeah, very cool. And also just like the sets are very big for the stuff for All Through the House. Like they're very big.
Yeah. Oh, and they were inspired by Home Alone.
Yeah.
The house, which you see that very much.
Yeah. But others, you know, you just kind of, you're like, we made it like this. We were inspired by this. And that's
right,
it.
Right.
And I was like, okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do get some very cool additional images. And with all of these stories, you get more from it. If that's what you want, if you want more Love, Death, and Robots, yeah. I would say go for it because you are getting more with every page.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
As of our recording this, I don't believe there's been any word yet of
the date
of the next one.
No. But, I mean, it's happening.
But they've won a million fucking Emmys.
Yeah, it has a lot of accolades.
And I don't think it cost them that much. I mean, it might. I have no fucking idea. But it doesn't seem like the marketing doesn't. They don't roll out the fucking wagon like they did for Wednesday. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like they know that there's just, like, the people that love it. You know what I mean? And so they'll just do it for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, something about the Drowned Giant. They did the order of the episodes with Kill Team Kill plays right before the Drowned Giant. Mm-hmm. So it's like this absolutely crazy, like balls to the wall, like gore fest. And then it's like this really meditative piece and it's really calm.
Well, we've talked about that. And every time we've talked about the show, like we love all of its different vibes and the way it goes from one thing to another.
The crazy tonal shifts. We didn't do anything on Bad Traveling, which like I adore. I just love it so much. And it's Fincher's.
Right.
I think so many people who were interviewed are like, oh my God, we learned so much from him. Or wow, we didn't know how to light things. Like this changed our, working with Fincher changed our whole perspective on how to light things in animation.
Right.
Which is very cool. Like his thing. Because he's
Tim Miller comes from the world of animation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically an animator too. Like David Fincher's not an animator.
Right. So that's cool. I mean, it says he's so collaborative and very excited about the process, but he has such a precise vision.
Mm-hmm.
He's polished.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. The alien Thanapod was supposed to be the size of a Range Rover. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Then when he moves across the boat, it's like if you drove something the size of a Range Rover across the boat, so it has to tip a certain way because it's weighing down. It's really, really wild. Oh, Fincher pushed us to light the scenes in a cinematic way and not feel an obligation to keep everything visible. So it's so funny because it's like they put in so much work. Like I imagine when you do a first pass over this shot. So they have a shot here of like the hull of the boat and it's extremely dark. Like you really can't see much. Right. And I imagine this whole thing's animated in great detail and then they make the whole thing dark.
Right.
Because it's just, you just need to know that something is there.
Right.
You don't need to see it necessarily.
Right. I think it takes a great amount of guts for filmmakers to give us darkness.
Yes and no. I will say that one of the great criticisms of the last season of Game of Thrones was like some episodes were so dark you couldn't see what the hell was going on.
Right.
And people are like, I need to know what's happening because a lot of people are dying and like I need to know which characters are dying.
Well, that's just bad. That's just not good.
And the cinematographer was so criticized for it. But, you know, obviously, I think it can be well done. Something else I thought was interesting about Bad Traveling was David Fincher has a thing about voice acting and line reading.
Yeah.
A perfect line reading for me is 80% the way I hear it and 20% holy shit, who would say it like that?
And that's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know any director who isn't looking to be surprised. Surprised as in, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
So that's something, I mean, if you're a prospective voice actor out there, you got to bring something original.
Yeah. I want to read more from that guy because I remember we looked up, like, that's like, that story takes place in, like, a fictional world that he built.
Yes.
Like, he has other stuff in that world.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of like throwaway lines that really fill in the rest of that world. Like, they say something about like possibly like a religion.
Yeah. And then the whole like shark thing.
Yeah. 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 Right. That's like we're hunting these types of sharks because of their oil. They're full of oil.
Right.
Which is so weird. I hated Swarm.
So yeah, here's like the anthologies.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I kind of want to like read these.
Me too.
I don't know how many they have out yet. They've got, I think they just have two so far.
It's also really interesting to see how like the characters look like the voice actors.
Right.
When
right.
it's not like a Michael B. Jordan situation. Like the Rosario Dawson character obviously looks like Rosario Dawson, but enough not like Rosario Dawson.
Right.
Where it's not like a one-to-one.
Well, when it's a celebrity, I think it's an interesting thing because it's like, do you make it look like the celebrity?
Mm-hmm. You get to really see the bear in Kill Team Kill.
Yeah.
Lone Survivor and Platoon are the big influences. Oh, God. Jeez. In our first recording session with Seth Green, I kept asking Seth to imagine throwing that pee stream way out there to make his dialogue sound more authentic. If you look closely at the scene, Folan's weapon changes size pretty dramatically between pissing shots. Jennifer Yu Nelson, you go to jail.
She's good.
She is good.
She understands the assignment.
She does. I think she like entertains herself by... Because she says it in the featurettes on Netflix. She's like, it's just funny that like I'm like just a small Asian woman and making something like Kill Team Kill.
I think
she really tickles herself when doing that.
That's what you should do as an artist.
And good for her. Yeah. So that was it. The Very Pulsing the Machine, Franco-Belgian comics.
Yeah.
Which I guess is all Mobius. But just really, really stunning. Just because something is colorful doesn't mean it has to be for children, they say.
Goddamn right. Or maybe it is. Let your kids watch fucking Love, Death, and Robots.
Henry is obsessed with this book. He tries to get it all the time because I'm always like, no. Because it has like really gory pictures and also just like, I mean, full bush.
Right.
So I'm like, no, this is not for
He's
you.
He's got to learn his anatomy at some point.
I mean, at some point. He knows. Please. There's no closed doors in this house. I wish. Yeah, I mean, like this. Like, who is that? Who is this mysterious woman?
Yeah.
Lovely. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed us reading this book.
I think this is a real supplemental to the other episodes we did.
Absolutely.
The book is supplemental to the show, and our episode on the book is supplemental to our episodes on the show. It's just... we fucking love Death and Robots.
We really, really do.
What can we do? It's the fucking one of the best things out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have it's not an art of book, but I got this book that's like the history of Masters of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, you know, a lot of interesting stuff there, like with the movie, like a lot of like early like designs for the movie. Like She-Ra was in the original script, so like what the She-Ra of the movie would have looked like and shit like that. But then when they got
cool.
But then when they got to Princesses of Power, they like gloss right over it. And it's like, this is the best thing in this whole franchise.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed by that. Because I fucking love... I've been thinking about doing a rewatch of Princesses of Power. Because it's so fucking good.
I love it. I really ship... what's his face?
Catra and...
No, not Catra. No, I mean, they're endgame.
Yeah.
Those two are canon. what's it? The big bad. Well, not the big bad.
Oh,
not Prime.
Horak.
Hordak. And, oh, good God.
Entrapta.
Yeah. I love those two.
Yeah. They make a good couple.
They're a little purple pair.
So this has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined by the green Janine Gagliardi. Go out and look at this book.
It's very cool.
We end every episode by saying,
oh, bye-bye.